Hello everyone, we are back in your ear holes once more to deliver some juicy nuggets of gaming chat that we sprinkle around inside your brain before vanishing into the night, never to be seen or heard from again until the next episode, I suppose. For any newbies, simply put, we are a video game book club podcast, and if you don't know what that is, then I cannot help you. This week, we are swinging into action by taking a trip back to an IP that we've now covered a number of times, so grab a banana, sit back in that tire swing and get ready for some fun. We, of course, are here to chat all things from Retro Studios' fantastic Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze. So, while you get your ears accustomed to our noise, I am David and he is Alex. Alex, how are you doing today? I know the answer to this already.
Pretty bad. Bit of a cold, so my voice is going to sound very odd.
Sexy.
Yeah, sexy, sure. And the ailment of trigger finger, which is not what American high schoolers have, it is just my tendons fucked themselves into a knot. So I've had a cortical steroid injection into the palm of my hand, which means it's basically my right hand is useless. I cannot wipe my own ass without being in extreme discomfort, more so than usual, which is, you know, not a minute amount.
Give me the symptoms to trigger finger. What does that involve?
So in the mornings, my middle finger and my ring finger on my right hand will basically, if I was to make a fist, they would lock into place and I'd have to like click them back out again. It's very scary the first time that happens because it feels like your fingers just won't move anymore. But I could just make a fist on my hand and it would all, like, the joints would just click like constantly throughout the day, all day long. It was my middle finger was swelling up. Very painful, and it's more painful now because even though the injection into the palm of my hand was the most pain I've ever felt in a singular moment in my entire life, it did also have local anesthetic involved, which wore off like an hour later, and then it just became excruciating. Like with every breath that went through me, a pain would shoot from my palm of my hand up to all my fingertips. It's fucking bullshit. I don't know how I got to sleep last night with it. So yeah, that was wank. Hated that. Still hate it right now. But I did get a day off work. Unfortunately, it's a day off work where I couldn't play any video games because my hand's fucked. So basically just did a lot of sleeping today. Hooray. Well,
there's worse things to do with your day.
There are certainly worse things to do with my day. One thing I did do with my day was watch something on YouTube, which reminded me of something that I'm going to tell you right now, which may shock you. You do already know this, but I need to remind you and everybody else of something incredibly shocking.
Okay.
It is February 2024.
It is.
And Skull and Bones is coming out this month.
So I decided, like, periodically I think, like, so I carry around a paper, like, for work purposes, I carry around a paper diary, and I write every day, I write myself a to-do list out. And it works quite well for making me sort of be productive through the day. So I was like, right, a few months ago, I was like, right, I am going to apply this productivity technique to my personal life. So I give any, like, stuff I've got to do throughout the day, whether it's stuff for this or go to the gym or whatever, go to the shops and collect stuff, do something around the house. I set it my to-do list and like tick it off as I go. Kind of got to the point where my to-do list and work list were like intermingling and just becoming this like absolutely massive screed of shit. I was basically just rewriting and then moving on to the next day. So I've started, as of today, taking my personal to-do list and like adding it to a Google Calendar, as well as like you get the tasks thing that you can tick off as you go on that. So I've got a tab open as I work through the day with my personal to-do list tasks going on that I can tick off as they get done. So I decided, I was like, right, when I was a lifeguard, I used to make huge use of the calendar and I loved it. So right, I'm going to start using Google Calendar again. So I, as part of that, have gone through the months of February and March and written out the notifications for the video game releases that I think are interesting coming up over the course of the month. So that's where that came from. I don't know why what you said to remind me of that.
Skull and Bones is coming out.
That's it. Skull and Bones was one of the games that came out, and I was like, "Ah, is it though?" Because
our long running joke of many, many years and hundreds of podcasts is going to be over. Hopefully, it's just a terrible game, and then we can laugh at it for that for another 5 years. But considering we're one of the few people in the world that's probably played this at this point,
I know, so good. And what you can almost guarantee the game that we have played is not the game that's about to come out.
I just heard in the video I watched that it's an MMO, or it's like a online multiplayer game now. I thought it was a... What did I think it was? Was it always that?
I don't fully remember. I just thought it was sort of the Assassin's Creed shipbuilding part from like many, many years ago.
Yeah.
That they had just sort of put into a game.
Yeah, because I would play a pirate game, but I don't want to play another Sea of Thieves where everybody who's better than me steals all my stuff all the time, aka is a pirate.
Yeah, there's a way to do that, because see when Sea of Thieves clicks, that is like one of the best gaming experiences I've ever had.
Yeah,
when that game comes together, there's really not much better.
Yeah, when I'm not falling off of platforms because I somehow can't do platforming in that game.
The combat also sucks as well, though, man.
It's so shit.
It's really bad.
Yeah, to get good at that, it takes effort to, like, master something that's awful. And who wants to do that with their lives?
Not us.
No. Well, no, that's why I got trolled all the time and just kept respawning over and over again on a burning ship with people nicking all my stuff. Awful. It's just ruined a good time.
We're here to have a good time today, though, Alex.
I've had a fucking ace time.
The format for this podcast, so it's probably useful to be honest at this point rather than try and hide it. It's been a little while since Alex and I have both played through Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze, but it has been a little while since we've done it. So there is a chance we've maybe forgotten the odd thing, but I mean, when we're talking about it, it's like 2 or 3 weeks since we've last played it. So it's not like we played it 6 years ago and then we're just going to try and talk about it just now. It's just been a little while since we've managed to make the things sort of line up and make time that we can both make it onto a podcast versus like time versus other commitments and things like that. So it has been a couple of weeks. So this format of this podcast is ever so slightly different. I think, Alex, you've got an idea for this that we're going to run with for a little bit. But before we do that, in terms of notes and things for this podcast, so what I've got is I've got a couple of things we want to talk about. We're going to discuss like the things like the characters, the music, do a little bit of brief, and I mean like brief on the plot, because who actually cares?
Don't think I even know what it is. It's cold.
Yeah, rank our Donkey Kong, rank it within our sort of this sort of grander sphere of Donkey Kong Country games, and then instead of going through, well, as an idea to go through each area and talk about the bosses and stuff, we have a ranking tiered list that we're going to share with you guys that we're going to go through, and we're going to discuss sort of like area one, and then we're going to rank it in the tier sort of A to S, and then we're going to talk about the area one boss, put them in the ranking, area two boss, area three boss, and so on until we get to the end of the game. If we've got stuff sort of repeats and we don't have much to say, we might not have a lot to say about each area. But I think I quite like to sort of cover the area, because it's one of these games that it's not like Alan Wake and stuff that we've covered recently where you really want to dig into the story and talk about how the game made you feel. This is just a really, really good platformer. So I think actually talking about the different parts of the game is much more valuable than anything else. On top of that, to make things a little bit more interesting, Alex, do you want to run through what you suggested?
Oh, yes. Well, not to spoil the actual part of the podcast itself too much, but I think David and I would probably put this game in our top 10 2D platformers of all time.
Maybe.
And because of that notion, we're going to just have a quick chat later on about our favorite 10 2D platformers of all time each. Not in any order, because I don't know. It's too hard for me to do it. I actually can't make an order out of that very easily of my 10. So we'll take it in turns to briefly talk about our 10. We're probably going to have some repetition in there, so it won't be just 20 games.
Yeah.
But just a nice celebration of a great genre.
Interested. I'm going to keep a tally of how many actual crossovers we've got. It'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. I know there's two already that we won't be crossing over, because you just mentioned in the prep for this that you need to remind yourselves. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess there's nothing else but to dive on in to this tropical freeze. So, this game is now available in a couple of places, well, two really. But originally, this game came out in February 2014. There was a couple dates, which I didn't actually write down a specific one, so I just went for the month, because it came out in Japan before it came out in the rest of the world on Wii U. But given the sales figures of the console, I suspect that most of us listening today will have played this on a different platform. When it came out in Switch in May 2018. So, depending on what metric is, this is 10 years old now. So this is like, well, I guess February 2014, we've just sort of hit the 10-year anniversary.
That's why we're doing it.
Now I've realised why we've played the game. it's currently sitting with a Metacritic on the Wii U of 83 and Metacritic of 86 on Switch. How do you think that works out for you?
Feels too low.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, like, it's not like offensive.
No, no.
But it does feel like it should be ever so slightly higher than that.
Yeah, interesting that the Switch version is higher, and I would posit one of the key factors behind that slightly higher score is that the Wii U one takes a fucking long time to load everything.
It does.
Is slow as hell.
I had a grand old time trying to make that game work for me.
Yeah. It's but that's really the only issue that I have with it. Like, yes, the graphics are slightly kind of jaggedy around the edges a little bit. Mm-hmm. There's a bit of lack of anti-aliasing going on there for the character models. But the animations of the characters are excellent. It does still looks pretty crisp for a Wii U game, which we forget is an HD console. It's not gonna come in out, looking like a Wii game or whatever. It's a nice thing to look at. Lots of colour, lots of nice environmental design. I wish the Switch one would somehow go down in price at some point, because it's been out. What did you say, 2018?
Yeah.
So 6 years, and it's still like £40, which is just too much.
I bought a Wii U so that we could play and cover Wind Waker, didn't we? And I managed to get through the whole of that game.
Mm-hmm.
Worked fine. Packed my way in my Wii U, dug it out to play this game, and it wouldn't work. I was Googling about it, and apparently the sort of disc drive, what is it called, like the laser that reads the discs, is quite a common error on the Wii U, so I can get it fixed for £50. So if I'm ever feeling flush one day, I'm going to get that done.
You could probably just get another console for that.
Yeah, I could just keep an eye out for a new one, couldn't I?
Because, I don't know what episode it was. Maybe it's the Wind Waker one that we talked about this, but David got what seemed like the deal of the century for, like, what was it, £60 for your Wii U and basically all the good games on Wii U.
3, 4, 5, 6 games, yeah. Six games.
Six crackers, which is basically the entirety of the cracker library on Wii U, aside from Bayonetta 2, which I don't think was part of that.
No, it was not.
Yeah, but now the fucking thing doesn't work. So there you go.
I am sort of half, like, I'm reticent to fully blame the console itself, because what I did was I put them up the loft, and I think that's maybe not a good place to keep electronics in a loft in Scotland.
Yeah,
fluctuate.
Yeah, forgot the geographical location doesn't help.
I think, I don't know, there's a chance I've done it, but there's also a chance it just sat there. Because it was perfectly fine for the entire time that I played Wind Waker. The only issue was that the big gamepad with the screen on wouldn't hold a charge. But I had a plug next to my sofa where I was playing it, and just sort of played with the Pro controller and used the other controller sitting on my table beside me as like an inventory manager, which was the way to play that game, to be honest.
Second screen,
exactly.
Whatever they call it. What do they call that? What's the phrase for that? Second screen, not syndrome. Experience, I guess.
Yeah, let's call it that. Let's call it second screen syndrome.
My Pro controller does not hold charge, so which is what I tried to play with this, which is one of the control schemes not even listed in the fucking manual. In the manual, I believe you have the gamepad, you have Wii U and Wii remote and nunchuck, and the Wii remote on its side.
Oh yeah,
I don't think they actually noted the Pro controller in there, and this game does the cardinal sin where inexplicably it makes you pick a control scheme as you start the game, whether you want to use something like,
so it does,
just the triggers for like sprinting and stuff, or you can use the triggers for rolling and then the face buttons for like picking things up and running. But also, you can only either use the D-pad or the analog stick. Why disable one for that?
Yeah, why make me choose right now? Yeah.
Because sometimes if I'm swimming, I would quite like to use the analog stick.
Yes.
But if I'm going left to right, why would I want to use an analog stick? So don't make me have one or the other. That's so annoying. I had to switch them. And you can't switch them in-game. You can't switch them on the world map. You have to come all the way out to the main menu, which, as previously discussed, takes a long time to load in.
It does.
I'm just not going to do it. So yeah, I just had to sit with the D-pad the whole time. I could never, it never had a control scheme that I was perfectly happy with. And I felt like, just let me pick what I want and I'll fix this on my own, lads. There we go.
I mean, we'll come to it at some point, but you're right. There are, the graphics do look sort of jaggedy, but there's certain aspects of this game that are like stunning still. I felt like, especially, I mean, we'll get to it, but the water level sections that start like making you go into the dark and things like that, and you can see his little red tie poking out. It's just quite, I just find it quite effective.
I mean, it performs great for, you know, for a game that's 10 years old, runs really nicely at 60 frames in 1080, maybe 720, I don't know what the Wii U was, but it runs in HD at 60 frames, and I didn't find any real issues with like slowdown or frame drops or anything like that. I would one day like to get the Switch version, but that ain't today.
No, it is not today. Yeah, it's just hard to justify that amount, especially when you own the game already. You're like,
yeah, exactly.
Nah.
Yeah.
We'll wait.
Yeah.
They'll probably re-release it again, which means the price is never coming down when the Switch 2 comes out.
They should either re-release the Wii one on Switch, which would be really good. That game is not better than this. It's a lot harder than this as well. Or they should just make a third one. I mean, I know Retro apparently are never going to finish Metroid Prime 4, but I really hope that they don't. I really hope that Nintendo is like not done with 2D Donkey Kong, because
I hope not.
They've
I
knocked it out of the park in the last two they've made. They've been perfect.
Yeah, they have. They really have, like, absolutely delightful games. Especially, it's one of these, like, I don't know what I was expecting coming into this, because we've covered, what, Donkey Kong 1 and 2 for the podcast. I know, like, I'll say this every time that these games come up, but we have played at least one more.
We started 3 and then we just could not be arsed with it.
Yeah, that's the one with the baby, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, just and then like so that one, I would say 3 was not a good game, and then was after that, did they go on to the N64 with the 3D one, which I've never played, but doesn't look good to me.
I've played it, and it's like just the most extreme collectathon that there has ever been.
It's not what I want from a Donkey Kong game. I want
no. They had some great ideas, but honestly, the grind in that game is just unreal for an N64 title.
Mm.
And then they went mad on the Wii with all the bongo shit. You know, I'm a big Donkey Konga mark.
Oh, so they did Donkey Konga. You're a big fan of that, though, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But they made some... Actually, apparently there's some of the games that they made that worked with that are actually supposed to be quite good. Is it Jungle Beat and... That's the one where you play the fucking bongos to control him in a platformer. And then there's another one about like jetpacks or something, like Barrel Blast or something like that on the Wii. Which I've never played. And then the Wii ended up like towards the twilight of the Wii, they brought out the Donkey Kong Country Returns, which is a...
I hope Barrel Blast is like a whole game built around there's a latter part of a couple of the cart missions where you're on a barrel and you've got to like in this game and you've got to make it go up and down. It's a bit like Donkey Kong meets Flappy Bird.
It is exactly like that.
Games. Yeah, I really love those sections.
Oh, they're so good.
And again, the carts feel slightly different than this.
Okay, that looks like a racing game. It is a racing game.
Oh.
Donkey Kong Power Blast is a racing game where the player can handle the selected character using the Wii Remote and Nunchuck, replacing the DK. Oh, yeah, so it was bongos originally, I think. And then they used, on the Wii, they kept bringing these out with like the new ways to play or whatever they called it, and you just fucking swing your Wii Remote and your Nunchuck instead of banging on a drum.
You get a couple of beers and have a set of bongos each and get bongo blasting.
You just called it Bongo Blast. I don't know if I did, but Bongo Blast was the original working title for it.
Oh, maybe I got that from you.
That's mad. Barrel Blast, yeah, that would be quite fun.
Right, Alex, the big question though, what is your character combination? Did it depend on the level, or did you go same for everything?
It did for a small number of times, depend on the level. There, there were some where there was like difficult traversal that I needed to do, and it felt like Diddy Kong was snappier with his hovering than Dixie was. That made it just easier for me. Like if I had some big gaps and things were swinging, and the, you know, I needed my timings right, I felt like I had a better control over hovering in the air with Diddy Kong. That was his only use, and that was seldom that he was that use. He is the worst for me.
Oh yeah, I was wait, I was surprised you mentioned Diddy there, because I was like, he is like bottom tier for me.
Yeah. We're starting and moving up.
Yeah. Okay.
If there was a some kind of floor hazard, like spikes or whatever, then Cranky all the way. Cranky mostly for boss fights as well, because that. The downwards, you know, we're going to get to it later, but the monkeys where they're swinging around, like he can do them even when they're swinging their hammers around. If you manage to land the spade drop smart, thing, same with the final boss as well, when he's charging you. But because I remember I watched you play this on stream, I managed to catch part of David's apparent speed run of this game where he beat it in a fucking day while I was in the office. And I said something like, if you're not using Cranky Kong, you're playing the game wrong. But you said you'd read somewhere that Dixie Kong is OP. And I now thoroughly agree with that she really fucking is.
Yeah, okay, you're all in on Dixie now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I remembered as I was playing, like, what was I on about? It's definitely Dixie is the way to play this.
So if I was just going for pure fun, I was going Cranky. I really enjoyed the way Cranky Kong worked.
It was like DuckTales, but actually usable. Like you just press a button rather than hold down, which with a D-pad can always get a bit hard to nail, you know, dead on down, because of the you can get a diagonal by accident or whatever. But he's the best DuckTales mechanic they've ever had of that.
He is, yeah. Even top better than 10 Shovel Knight. DuckTales mechanics, Cranky Kong comfortably number one.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dixie I found useful a lot of the time in bosses, because there was a lot of the time where your jumping had to be quite precise, and she allowed you to sort of add a little bit of padding to the sides of that, which I thought was quite good. So like if you went too early or too late, you were stuffed anyway, but if you went too early, you could sort of maybe beat it a little bit. Or if a floor, as was wont to do, would fall away from you, you could sort of use her to get out of the way. Especially, I think the last boss I had a bit of trouble with a bit of that.
Yes.
There's like his final form, the floor would start falling away, and I couldn't quite figure out how I was meant to predict or stay up there long enough.
I have a confession to make in that for my second playthrough of the game, which was this playthrough, could not finish that.
Oh,
got
my God.
All the way to that section at like
that was hard.
At like midnight, because we were planning to do this, last week?
Last week.
And I fucking like pushed through as long as I could go till middle of the night. I was like, I can't do it. I got all the way to that final bit where and it just insta kills you. Like the platforms disappear, you're dead.
Such a son of a bitch, that bit.
And then you start all over again. I was like, you know what? I've beaten this before in my life. This is the last part of the boss. I haven't got anything to prove to anybody. I'll send a picture of my safe fucking file if you don't believe me.
I'll put it on Twitter.
I'll 1v1 you at Rodent Ruckus, you pricks.
We'll get to that with that boss. I don't want to ruin all my chat for that for later. But yeah, if I was to rank them, I mean, Donkey Kong is what he is, I guess. I mean, you don't have a choice. You've got to go with him. But he's okay.
Oh, the roll move, you know, the rolling into enemies is good, and rolling off of the ledge and then getting a jump like when he's halfway off, which is you know, classic technique. But that was so useful a lot of time, like really useful for the final boss on this, because a lot of the time I'd end up like losing my other Kong for some stupid reason, and then I would just ignore the fact they were there and just roll towards and then jump over him. I do like the way that this has DK as the standard moveset, and then everything else is like additional to him rather than you're totally swapping out one of the two characters. Because back to Dixie Kong, she's definitely the best to have with you underwater for her. Just hold down B and she does that like spinny hair thing. I mean, you need that to get into a lot of the secret levels, but she makes it like way more zippy under the water than just pressing DK or tapping the button to spin attack.
To do the old spin attack.
Cranky's quite useful underwater as well, because he swings his cane at some enemies for you. But I think that then loses the breaststroke of DK sort of replacing it with that.
It took me a while to actually start using the old Spinaroonie move, because I was just, there's a bit of the game where you cannot progress unless you use it.
Yeah, because there'll be something blocking you, won't there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Up until that point, I was just old school doggy paddling like they like to do, and having a fine old time.
Obligatory mention of DK's underwater sections being the only acceptable ones in.
Yeah, well, I was saving that up.
Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
It's going to happen. But yeah, it's true. It's one of the few examples of video game swimming that's done well. I was trying to think of the other ones because I made a top five list at one point.
You need to reveal this at some point.
I'm going to have to reveal. I think Abzu was on there because that was fun.
I've never played that.
It's a game that's just swimming.
Okay.
Mario did not make the list. I don't know if that's controversial or not. I don't like the swimming in Mario very much.
Well, in the original Mario games, it was just slowed down platforming, wasn't it? Isn't that what it was? Like they slowed the jumping arc down and just put a blue background on it. I can't think of many great ones because it's always Donkey Kong that comes to mind. The levels are always fun, and you used to get a swordfish under there, which just made it perfect.
Yeah, that's true. Is he in this?
No.
Must be.
Just Rambi, innit?
Oh, yeah. Good old Rambi, though.
Survived. Yeah.
Big fan of old Rambi.
There's a good level with him in it.
There is. The music... I did actually think about putting a music tiered list together as well, but, I mean, you'll see. I didn't do it. The music's great in this as well. I don't have a massive amount to say about it. You're better with music and stuff than I am, but loved it. It's just fits. It's reminiscent of Donkey Kong.
Well, it's the same guy, so yeah. Davis, my key point about the music in this game is the question of back to underwater again. I mean, has anybody ever made better underwater music than David Wise? Because
I don't think it's true. I don't think so.
It's incredible. Like there's a level I think called World 4-1. I don't remember what that one's called, but that's got aquatic ambience. Yeah, Deep Keeper's got aquatic ambience, which is the song from Donkey Kong Country 1, which is incredible. And then Irate 8, which is like the octopus one, has the from Donkey Kong Country 2. And then the secret level in World 4 has them both in the same track.
Oh, amazing.
That secret level is great, but the octopus level is fucking amazing. Oh no, sorry, Deep Keep is amazing. That's the one where it's like a silhouette level underwater and you've got to like make things light up your way for you. The world map music as well makes a lovely return.
It does.
Fantastic. Great, great soundtrack. Just really enhances how much of a good time this game is.
Yeah, so I don't know, it's not worth it, but the plot, I sort of read the plot today and then thought, I don't need to write this down, I can sort of remember it. Basically, Donkey Kong's tropical island gets invaded by someone that brings ice. Ice is the place, and then Donkey Kong goes on a mission to de-ice. Nip down the co-op to get some de-icer.
He gets the ice scraper out as well.
He does.
doesn't he get like completely battered to another part of...
He does, yeah.
Somewhere.
Because
he gets smashed off his own island. Yeah, that's the last world, isn't it?
The last world, the first level is called Homecoming or something like that. And it's basically when he gets back to his island. So yeah, he gets smashed into a different place and you slowly sort of make your way back.
Yeah.
Fighting the enemies that have overtaken your island and sort of killing the bosses as they go. I very much like how, I don't know, the platform in this game is tough at times, but I like how the bosses are, and I don't remember it being quite like this in the previous games. Maybe the final boss of the first game was a bit like this, but the thing I like about this game is it just makes the bosses something completely different from what you've been doing before.
Yeah.
Like they're just totally different. Like what the first game wasn't it? It was sort of bouncing a tire, jumping someone's head.
Oh, the original ones, the bosses were the weakest part by a long way.
Exactly,
Donkey Kong Country 2's bosses were better, but yeah, this is a whole different level. These are really well thought out.
The bosses are a real highlight of this game.
They are.
And it's funny, like it's what we kind of speak about with like Dark Souls, and I need to be in the mood for it. And I'm not about to hate when everything gets linked to Dark Souls these days, but like, and I'm not doing that. The sort of correlation that I'm trying to draw is like they're at times incredibly difficult, but they never feel unfair. And I was very rarely, if ever, annoyed at the game. I was just, right, I've made a mistake. I need to go on and do this bit better. which I think is obviously the marker of a good boss and a well-made encounter, because you're not annoyed when you fail. You're just incentivized to go and try again.
Yes. I think the only time I was ever actually annoyed at the game was trying to unlock the secret levels, but that is, you know, that's going out of your way to get the additional stuff. So I expect to be frustrated by that. But yeah, there'll be times when it's just like, you know, you have to get all the way to the end of the level and have Dixie Kong there, otherwise you can't do it, kind of thing, which that would make it tougher than normal. But you know, there is a very good level of fair challenge to this game, and they make it even fairer by having the shop. You get plenty of coins. Like I had 90 odd level lives at all times.
Yeah, lives are just not a problem, are they?
Yeah, and you know, you can go buy stuff that you can have up to 3 things that you can use in the level before you start it that will help you. You can have a Kong from the word go, you can have extra hit points, you can have extra air underwater, or
yeah.
So, you know, they give as much of a chance to you as I think should be given to if you're struggling. I think it's really, really well balanced.
One thing I didn't do, but I've seen do, at some point you can unlock the use of what's the other Kong that's got like the sunglasses on? What's he called?
Oh, Funky.
Yeah, you can use him in this game, can't you?
I don't know how.
But he must be like an unlockable character if you get enough of the pieces and things like that, I would guess.
Okay. Oh, he's apparently the easy mode.
Oh, is he? Right, okay. That's how I never encountered him. I'm too good.
Once you've you choose a mode. Funky Kong mode. So I think that must be on the Switch version. I don't think he's in the Wii.
He's not in the one we played.
I don't remember a Funky Kong mode, yeah. Yes, that's in the Switch version only.
That'll be why I never encountered him then.
Yeah.
That explains it, mate.
All you've got to do is spend money. Pay to win.
Yeah.
Buy the Switch version.
I think it's time to dive into the levels.
Yeah.
Do you have any standout memories of Mangrove Cove? I guess it's one of these ones that you maybe don't, because this is the first world, so it's sort of opening you up to the concepts, the different ways to play the game, and the different things you can do. Like, we're watching it here quickly. I mean, within minutes, you've had to slide down a hill, swim. You've been given oxygen. It's shown you how to kill enemies. It's shown you how to collect coins that are above enemies. Yeah, this is just a sort of how to play the game mode. But
yeah,
do you have any standout memories of it? Other than that, it's okay if you don't. We've got a long old game to get through.
I think the secret levels in this one are the best ones. There's one called Zipline Shrine, which is, as you'd expect, it's a level full of zip lines that you. Mm-hmm. I really like that this game, unlike the original games where Donkey Kong would automatically grab hold of something just by jumping towards it, this one, not only do you have to hold down for me it was the Y button to actually make him reach out and grab. I love the fact that there's an animation for that as well, whereas if you're not quite close enough to grab a vine or whatever, you'll see him like reaching and clutching at shadows. But I really like in the sort of the zip line level, you've got to, like, sometimes you have to just let go of the grip button to drop down to the lower one and then jump back up. It's like there's more than one button to press to jump between the zip lines, which was cool. And there's a silhouette level called Busted Bayou as a secret level.
I love the silhouette levels. They're incredible. Such a sucker. You know, and maybe that's why I used to like Limbo so much back in the day.
Yeah.
Like, I'm such a sucker for like a silhouette level. There was what was that fight? The final station has got like a couple of silhouette sections that I also quite enjoyed. Like, yeah, there's just so many games. And I just think it's an easy way to make something quite visually effective.
Yeah. They hide lots of enemies in that secret one in World 1. So, like,
they do.
They're sort of like, they look like they're grassy bits, but they're actually enemies like hiding in the under the. Ground to come out and get you. Did you unlock all the secret levels?
No, I didn't, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Sort of played through the game main, and then I started going back to do it, and then I got distracted by Tomb Raider, I think, is what I was playing instead, which was a far worse option for me.
Oh, that Tomb Raider, yeah. I thought we talk about the original. Yeah, because speaking of, they're bringing that out this month as well, aren't they?
The old remaster's on its way.
Good lord.
You can optional controls as well. You can go old school, terrible controls,
or
you can play modern, I don't know, free-flowing controls, how you describe that.
That remains to be seen.
Yeah, we'll see.
I've never done all the K levels in this game. Like,
oh, have you not?
I think they're end game after you've beaten the final boss. Mm-hmm. My save file, I think I was stuck on 2K because they are fucking difficult.
Oh, are they?
One day I will beat them.
One day you'll get there.
Yeah, it might be a reason for me to just hold off for the Switch version. Get the Switch version, do the K levels.
You need to get good internet so I can see all these video game feats happening in real time.
Mm.
Instead of just hearing about them through osmosis.
You're right. The first world, you know, it's got a nice little sort of jungle canopy with lots of Viking looking ships motif going on throughout. Doesn't really have anything of a main theme to it. It's just, as you say, introductory, but all good.
I don't know, this is probably stating the obvious, but there's always a lot of pressure on things like, I think, with the first world of a video game, because it's got to be engaging to capture the interest of the player. It's got to be visually stimulating, but also not so much better than the rest of the game that it just pales in comparison.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's got to be, and it's got to almost be putting your best foot forward, but not blowing your load so that everything's over too quickly. Does that make sense?
Put your best foot forward, not your best feet. Otherwise, you've got no feet left.
Save a couple of feet for later on.
Yeah, a couple of nice looking toes will do.
What did you think about good old big boss, big top bop? I struggle to say that. That is the seal lad.
All the bosses in this are good. This one,
they're all good.
This one's a definite cranky one for me,
which we need to discuss. It's a cranky one.
Yeah, I think so, because again, when he's doing his
when he's doing his little half pipe moves,
yeah, you can just cranky straight on his head, and it will get rid of him quicker. But this is I think this is one of the highlights of the first world. This is and I just like how a lot of the bosses, you kind of like, you keep knocking them off platforms or into water or whatever, and they just seem to get annoyed as they continually have to climb their way back up again.
Yeah. I think actually the animation in that sort of terms is pretty useful, because you can see them actually getting more annoyed. The final boss, I guess we'll get to as well, but he's great for that.
Yeah.
And he starts off by like chucking stuff at you, laughing at you, and then when you catch him, he is absolutely outraged that you've caught him.
Yeah.
And then, we'll come to him. But yeah, he's a pretty straightforward boss, I guess.
I mean, all the bosses in this game have a lot to them. They're not just like, all of them are not like really one note. They all seem to give you multiple stages where they up their game just a little bit, which is like so much better than almost all 2D platformer bosses. They're normally just three hits in Mario usually and they're done. But this one, you know, he's constantly going in the water, chucking different stuff at you as it gets harder. And then he's trying to, as you said, do the half pipe stuff.
It's good. So let's rank these, Alex. Let's rank these bad boys. World 1, where does this sit for you?
B.
I'd agree with that. I guess I reserve the right to put forward an idea to change as we go. I think for the moment, a B seems fair. It's good. It's the first one, so it's not overly challenging. Yes. It's not quite showing all its hand. Overall, a good one. What about the boss? How does that? Is that sort of B-ish, or would you put
I would say a
down?
B, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's about the same.
Of the worlds are going lower than B, personally. But we'll see.
I don't think so, no. I guess we'll get there. Let's get some Windmill Hills up.
I tell you what, my favourite, if we're on to World 2 now, my favourite level in World 2 is Sawmill Thrill, easy money, all day long.
Oh, well, minecart level, I think that's worth a mention. That they continue to be my highlight of this entire game, the minecarts. I love them. I would play a whole minecart game, I think.
I don't know why people... It seems to be that like a lot of people have issues when they talk about the original Donkey Kong games. They seem to all have issues with like the cooler, more unique stuff. Like they don't like the minecart levels, they don't like the barrel
levels.
Do they
not?
I think that's what I seem to read, but... They're some of my favourite parts and why I love the Donkey Kong series so much. Like, minecart levels and barrel levels are awesome. This is the cool bit about Sawmill Thrill, where, like, you're in some sort of, I don't know, makeshift cart that's basically been, like, cut by some giant saw blades and it's going on the water with it. Really cool idea there. And also, the level Rodent Ruckus is the second secret level in the World 2 is one of my favorite levels in the whole game. Rodent Ruckus is a level where you're on like the barrel rocket thing, going basically through a mouse cheese factory.
Yes.
And having to dodge different sizes of like Edam, or different shaped parts of Edam, and loads of cheese everywhere and stuff. It's just really, really cool ideas, like mice swinging from the ceiling, lobbing cheese to each other you got to get out of the way of. Just like so much environmental stuff going on as you're trying to concentrate on this fucking barrel shit.
I know I keep mentioning this, but I genuinely wonder if the creator of Flappy Bird was playing this when he made Flappy Bird.
Maybe.
Because it is so similar.
Yeah.
The other thing, there's one of these levels later.
Around.
Yeah, true. There's one of these, it's older than Flappy Bird, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I know Flappy Bird everything off, but this probably was inspired by that.
There's one of these types of levels later on in the game that like constantly changes perspective that I really, really liked as well. You're like, it goes from like this angle to like over the shoulder.
Yeah, I like the over the shoulder stuff in the barrel thing as well.
And it's just done really, really well. They mess with a lot of things like that. Like we were talking about like the use of color in the dark rooms, and the flipping perspectives, or just even taking like at the cart levels and putting a little spin on it by taking you out of the cart and just making skidding along in a bit of wood, just makes that ever so slightly different in a way that's like not massively different. Don't get me wrong, they're not like redefining the Donkey Kong cart level, but it's just sort of just enough of a twist to sort of make you feel like you're just holding on by the skin of your teeth. I think I spoke about this when we were playing Bioshock for like the first podcast we ever did for this, and like my favorite memory of Bioshock back in the day is like when you're coming through encounters and you're sort of just you're feeling like you're coming through just to know more. I think that's partly why I like these cart levels. Yeah, you're sort of coming through them by the skin of your teeth and no more.
Yes.
And
yeah, they
the
feel
game
like
is,
a real achievement at the end for sure.
There's a franticness to it that I don't think the rest of the game has.
Agreed. It can feel quite sort of easy or chill, but there is like a not a relaxing vibe, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely do. Let's talk about the boss, Alex. Another boss that I thought was really good fun. The thing I like about this one is each phase is very different from the last.
Yes.
There's another game, and I actually remember it while I was playing it, but there's another game that I've played recently. It might even be a Donkey Kong game, where as you're fighting, it is a Donkey Kong game. There's another boss in Donkey Kong Country 2. Is it the one on the ship?
Yes.
By the end of the ship, you end up right up the top.
Yeah. Then you do actually have to throw eggs back at him as well. So I think maybe this is a bit of an homage to that. The
Could
old
be.
What's this guy's name?
It's called Mountaintop Tussle.
The level is called Mountaintop Tussle. Yeah, I'm not sure either what the big sort of king owl is.
I love his design. I actually quite like the sort of slight Viking designs of a lot of this stuff.
The whole of this level has quite a Viking thing going on as well. This world where you've got the Horntop Hill. Where it's got like what looks to be like sort of flagons of Viking ale that you're jumping on, which is quite cool. This boss, it's definitely a Dixie Kong boss fight, not a Cranky Kong this time, because you've got to jump over lots of spiky ice balls. But yeah, this is a good one. This is a good one. They're all good. I prefer this.
We're going to be saying that a lot.
I would put this...
It does have a good cart level.
It has a great cart level, and that bonus cheese level is fucking amazing. S or A?
Yes.
Maybe A. Oh, I don't know. I really like the vibes at the beginning and the fight of this with like the music. It reminds me of Windmill Plains and Diddy Kong Racing.
Yeah, fair, okay.
The boss, I wouldn't say, is S.
It's not. I'm trying not to say B, because I feel like I'm going to end up with a massive B here.
I would say B, though.
Yeah.
Go on,
I'm trying to think for all the bosses. Of all the bosses, it's probably my least favourite, but I still really like it. Actually, I'm looking forward to the underwater discussion, because I was getting quite angry at that.
Shocking.
Can't decide whether I was getting angry at it because I wasn't very good at it, or... Yeah, we'll get to that, I guess. Next up, we've got Bright Savannah. Do you have any levels that stick out that you would like to have on while we are moseying our way through this?
Well, the first level is quite funny, isn't it? Because it's my notes here, I've written, the first level of World 3 is like that Lion King level, but in a good game this time.
Oh, yeah, the giraffe sort of climbing bits.
Yeah. They're like, they're almost like made out of sort of like paper or something, aren't
they? Paper, yeah. They're almost kind of flag like.
Yeah,
very much like. I think this is the world where I started really using like noticing to use the, you know, like how you can climb in. Like, there's lots of hidden sections where you can climb like round things. Yeah, yes. Very much enjoyed this whole level. So this is actually a great level.
This is a great
I love
level.
The music. I love the vibe. I think like when you get to World 3 in this these types of games, this is where it starts to take the gloves off and become a little bit more difficult, which I appreciated. I sort of uniquely to me just loved is I just wanted this game to make itself as hard as it could. So it makes me think I should probably go back and play the first one of these games if you're saying it's harder.
Oh yeah, it's way harder. That's the first one. Yeah, so the first level is good. I was also a big fan of Frantic Fields in this one as well, which I think is 3-3. This is a good one because I like how they, at one point in the level, they're just like, there's a massive like whirlwind behind you. And
Oh, yeah, that's right. And you're running like, away. It's
like firing cows at you and shit out of a whirlwind. And it's got Rambi in it. So, you know, who doesn't love that?
Oh, Rambi's top tier. It did take me a while when I was playing this game, both with Rambi and with Donkey Kong himself, to get sort of the way to move quickly. There's not like, at least unless I was playing the game completely wrong, which would be hilarious considering I managed to complete it, there's not like an overt sprint button with Donkey Kong, is there?
There is a hold Y to run rather than sprint, but realistically, like to get a large jump going, you have to roll into
and
it.
Jump.
Yeah, you have to obviously press the roll button with Rambi to smack him on the ass constantly, and you can just keep hitting the button and he will just keep running really fast.
It's not this level. There's a level where you're on Rambi and things are falling down like behind you. It's basically got to keep ahead of the stuff. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah,
level.
That's
that was great.
Really frantic at the end. Mm-hmm. I quite like Scorch and Torch in this world as well, which is one where it deals a lot with like a lot of stuff is on fire and you're throwing those little water bombs at them to put things out so you can climb on vines that are on fire or stand on platforms.
It's funny, it's a game called Tropical Freeze, and there's very much not freezing happening in this level.
Quite the opposite.
Mm. I think I'm repeating myself now, but I'm such a big fan of the way this game uses like colour in the lack of.
Yes.
I just think it's like, from an art perspective, it's beautiful. It's absolutely stunning.
Yeah, and it's using, you know, 2.5D, it's using like 3D models on a sort of 3D flat looking background, like faux 3D, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So you know, it's not exactly like it's incredibly stylish. It's got a bit of the feel of like, you know, the recent like a Mario Wonder sort of visual style to it. It's not like a Rayman or whatever where it's like hand drawn gorgeous art or whatever, but it's really effective, as you say, certainly in terms of like the lighting.
If you're a developer at Nintendo, you become very adept at doing a lot with not very much. Because,
correct.
I mean, comparatively to other systems and the PC and things like that, the system has for a long time been incredibly underpowered. So, yeah, they've just become very good at making their games look good without necessarily having a graphical powerhouse to throw at it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And this is another example of that. I mean, like you were saying, when we started recording this podcast, this is maybe not even 1080p, and it still looks pretty good.
Yeah. One of the bonus levels in this world as well, called Rickety Rafters, it's got a really clever mechanic to it, where you do lots of things, like you hang off of ropes or you throw bombs at targets, like water bombs at targets, and it will like move platforms for you. And the whole level is kind of similar to that, or it follows that theme, which I think is really, it's like a really cleverly done level where you're basically manipulating all the platforms for yourself. Yeah, really cool idea.
I mean, I know this is stating the obvious, but I'm such a fan of the enemy design, because it's like Donkey Kong apparently lives in like a tropical island. So they've sort of designed most of the enemies and the encounters around like the anti-tropical island, which I guess like it's like they'd almost sat down in their meeting and like, what's the opposite of a tropical island? freeze cold. Yeah. So they've created all the enemies around that. And then on top of that, they've like, I don't know, what's like a what's a bad guy that lives in the cold? Oh, Viking. And I just think it is like, it just works so well.
Yeah, as a polar sort of, bear. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. The more we play these Donkey Kong games, I am increasingly of the opinion that Donkey Kong does not get the credit it deserves in any way, shape, or form.
I agree with that completely. And certainly this game did not get the credit it deserved because it wasn't Metroid Prime, which is what everybody expected.
So that
Retro were going to do, because they'd done Donkey Kong Country Returns for the Wii. Everyone was like, right, okay, that's out of the system. Next up is another Metroid Prime, please, for the Wii U. And then they obviously didn't do it. So
even when Nintendo says it's doing a Metroid Prime, it doesn't seem to want to do a Metroid Prime.
Exactly. But it was just, yeah, there was an element of like, oh, another Donkey Kong. We just had one of those. We need a Metroid. Like, alternate your development. But this is so much better than the first Donkey Kong Country Returns or whatever it is.
In a world in which we live, that the industry is constantly churning out sequels and sort of remakes and remasters, I cannot imagine that these games are overly expensive to produce. Like, once you've got your assets and things like that, so I just don't know why we don't get more of those. I'd happily pay for like one of these every year or every other year.
Absolutely.
Because you just need more levels. Like, everything else is in place. You've got a tight control scheme. I mean, it's the same with Rayman and things like that. It's that you've got your, in Mario, well, Mario's different because it's quite unique these days. But like, there's a formula here to these games, and yeah, I don't know why we don't just get more of them. They cannot be expensive to make, but I guess like that's Nintendo's thing, isn't it? It tries to hold things until you want more of it.
Yeah,
and then if it doesn't sell, even if you want more of it, they won't make them. Like Metroid games. The boss for this world is called Triple Trouble.
Yeah, this is a great boss.
Big fan of this, and I think this is probably the first boss that gave me some real trouble, which is apt.
It is three monkeys, isn't it? Even though there's, well, they're like
they
baboons,
become
I
ghost
guess.
Monkeys, out, yeah, but they become like ghost monkeys at some point.
Yeah, and they're doing, as I was sort of alluding to earlier, they sort of swing down from these rafters above you, and sometimes they're vulnerable for a hit, and sometimes they are swinging a mallet. But this guy on the video that David's watching, this is on our YouTube version of this podcast, everybody listening, Cranky will allow you to hit them anyway, even if they are swinging that mallet.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. I wonder, I'm now interested to see if I can go and figure out who I did this boss with. I wonder if I did it with Dixie, thinking that I could use it to hover over things.
This for me is, yeah, well, it's easily the best boss so far anyway.
Oh, I'd really, say so, really good. Without a doubt.
Goes on quite a while as well, so it's quite a, you know, it's a, not a slog, but it's, you know, you've got to concentrate for a long amount of time, which I enjoy.
I think as these, there's a couple of these, the bosses in this game that go on for quite a long. Again, I ended up quite enjoying that because you've got to, like, really sustain everything, and there's no checkpoints in the bosses themselves. So you've got to, like, sort of put a run together, and I just ended up really appreciating that.
Yeah.
It was something I quite enjoyed doing.
Yeah, it's a prolonged test of your skill, which I really, I respect that, rather than just a couple of jumps on them and then they're out of the way. You know, the Mario 3D games are not the exact thing to compare this to, but a lot of the bosses in like the Galaxy games and all that kind of stuff, they really, either they were spectacle only, or they were just super easy. Even Odyssey had loads of easy bosses. So I respect this game for having ones that are a significant challenge.
Absolutely. Where would you slap
The world itself, I would say.
This one? No, we're on. What are we on? Savannah.
Yeah, I'd say that the world itself gets an A, and I would have the boss at an S personally.
I'd go with. I'd agree with that. Try to think. It's just like, yeah, we're not really using the scale this time, but I don't want to. Yeah, an A and an S. I think that's true. I think that's fair. Seabreeze Cove, Alex. Have you got any standout levels for this in your?
I think we've kind of talked about them from the music perspective when we were going into them earlier on there, with the one with the octopus in it, and there's the one that's the silhouette level.
I love the silhouette level. Just in terms of colours and stuff like that. I just like the red on the black. I don't know, it's such a simple thing. It's not even an observation or like a useful contribution to this podcast. I just think it looks so nice. The sort of deep red contrast to the black just enjoyed looking at it.
Yeah. The way that, like, a lot of the level is sort of shrouded in darkness, but you can spin towards fish to give you some lit up pathways, and you have to try and tell which of the, I don't know, the grass, it's not grass, but whatever that is coming out of the sides, you know, if they're lighting up,
you know, you're going to get electrocuted.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you can, you know, you're lighting up creatures sort of hidden in the background, like giant, whatever the hell that fish thing is.
Again, it's a slight repetition of earlier on, but like we're talking about like them doing a lot with a little. This is a great way for them to do that. Like, there's not a lot going on in a lot of this level. It's there's like two or three colors happening. They've got a fairly static background.
Yeah.
And they're just really sort of picky with the way they use the light.
I was just about to say they're picking and choosing when they want to light things up and when they're not. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really smartly done.
Kind of mixed on this one, in that, like, if I was thinking about, like, when it comes to the tier list, I think this is probably one of my favorite to look at. I even like it. So the bit we're at just now for people listening to is there, he's sort of come out of the water and he's the inside of a ship. I even think that is nice to look at. Mm-hmm. If I'm being critical, I didn't not like it. Again, I enjoyed playing it. There are a few times in this world where you've got to just sort of sit and wait for things. And I'm just not a fan of that, to be honest.
No, I'd rather they
incentivized me to keep moving or gave me something to do. There's a couple of things where you've just got to, you know what I mean, just like stay still and wait for something to come round again.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen a lot, but I guess I'm trying to be critical.
What do you think to the air meter that you have in this game? I didn't expect that. You know, I felt like sometimes I didn't even notice that it was being used until it got probably to this world where you're under. Well, yeah, or rather this world where you're underwater so much that then it actually becomes an issue that you need to get air from the bubbles, you know, like Sonic the Hedgehog would.
Yeah, I didn't consciously mind it. I don't think. I'm trying to think how else they would have shown us with the air bubbles without just, you know, like having a water meter. I think probably is not as good for the visuals.
It took a long time for me to actually notice that you do have a meter that shows your how much breath you've got left. Well, there you go. You can see it there. Look, the blue thing.
Going down. Yeah, okay. I just completely didn't even notice that. Obviously, it worked for me.
So seldom did you probably run out of air that you would never have actually noticed it. But it's once I noticed it, then, yeah, I started to realize how quickly it would go down compared to how much I was realizing. I must have just been getting lucky.
Yeah. It actually shows you how much I paid attention, because I was constantly forgetting, you know, how you had that special move that would kill everything on screen.
Yeah.
Constantly forget I had that.
Or I would use that to, like, get rid of obstacles, and it would just be like, no, Alex, you can't get rid of spiky balls with this. It's just for enemies. Like on a boss. I was like, ha-ha, gutted. Oh, wait, no.
It'd just do nothing. Yeah. It wouldn't even register that you've done it.
High Tide Ride fucking rules, by the way. That's the best kart level in the entire game.
Oh, man, they're so good, the kart levels.
Yeah, and what's I guess quite funny about the kart levels as well is it's like most of the time, except on this one really, you are just pressing like one button. But this is, I think, when you were talking about like how the perspective changes.
Oh yeah, here it goes. Yeah, this is an example of that, and you've got to like jump and change tracks. That's right, isn't it?
This is fucking awesome level for that.
So good.
Just a nice little twist on a well trodden formula, but just makes it.
I was about to say, oft done. Yeah. But it's still good. Like Sonic is quite the Sonic games are quite good for this. Yeah.
Yeah, this is brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely excellent. Truly excellent. I need to talk about the boss.
Okay. The fucking Fugu face off.
Because I depending on the moment, I was going to say depending on the day, but honestly I could flip just thinking about it in the lead up to this discussion, I've flipped on it numerous times. I swung wildly from being incredibly annoyed by this boss to thinking it was quite fantastic. He's really unlike anything. For those of you that are listening rather than watching, he's like a massive puffer fish that sort of alternates size, and he sort of blows and sucks, and you've got to wait until he spins round and hit him in the ass.
Yeah.
There's a part of this where he takes up most of the screen.
Yeah.
And again this goes back to my old problem with swimming in video games, in that often they require precision accuracy and do not give you the tools to do so.
Which is where I wish I could have just used the fucking analog stick and not be stuck to using the D-pad because I chose that 3 hours previous. But yeah.
What was your thoughts on this boss? Because
He's tough. Yeah, I struggled with him. Yeah. Making a boss fight, but also putting it underwater is, you know, satanic, as far as I'm concerned.
Am I letting my dislike for swimming, or my sort of, like, if any time something becomes frustrating and I'm swimming, I just automatically decide I dislike this? Am I being unfair because I just automatically go to not like it?
Swimming in video games, I guess, fundamentally exists to wrest control away from you to an extent as some sort of, like, artificial difficulty spike. Whereas most of this world is based around that. However, I think the world itself is fucking excellent. I love this world. This is one of my favorites in the game.
The world itself is top tier.
Yeah, but I think that boss is probably maybe a C.
Yeah, let's have a look. I was thinking, I would like to put the world S, if possible.
Yes, please.
Yeah, and I think C.
Just to use a bit of the scales.
I was getting annoyed playing it, but once I'd finished it, sort of appreciated it for what it was, quite enjoyed it. It just doesn't really allow for any mistakes, this one, whereas the other ones you can make a couple errors and still sort of find your way through, apart from the last phase and the last boss, which I suppose we'll get to as well. But yeah, this one doesn't, and those little ice gems things kept catching me out. You've had an ice gem recently, have you not?
I had 3 packs of ice gems recently. Out of a pack of 6.
Did they have eyes like the walls do?
No, and I didn't die by touching any of them either, which was nice to know.
Maybe your hand did.
Yeah, maybe.
We're getting near the end, Alex. Juicy Jungle we've got.
Juicy Jungle has an incredible concept. Like, this is galaxy brain shit. Theming an entire... Well, first of all, like, huge kudos to this game for, like, effectively giving every single level its own theme within an overarching theme of a world.
Yes.
Like, it's not just a bunch of shit chucked together. It's all like everything's thought out. But this world especially actually follows a theme from start to finish, where you go through like gradually seeing how all these animals make like fruit juice and stuff towards the end. Because you've got like jellies.
Sort of industrial sector, right?
Yeah, this is like more of like the factory part where they're like actually like churning up all the fruit to
the
make
farmers
it into juice.
The Donkey Kong world,
guess so, yeah.
And these are occupying the food.
But like later on, you've got jelly to jump on.
Yes.
Yeah, they like do like ice cream later on, like ice lollies as well. Frosty fruits is another one. And jam and jams. Obviously, where they're making jams. Jam and Jams is one of the secret levels. It has like, it's another barrel-y, you know, shooting yourself out of barrels and lots of timed platforms in it. I really like that one.
That was the thing I kept waiting to happen in this game is like I wasn't remembering Donkey Kong 2 very well at the time, but I was sort of I was having a bit of a standout memory of the barrel levels in the snow in the first
Donkey Kong game that are
just brutally difficult.
Yeah.
And I can't expect it to happen, but yeah, they never really go for that this time around. There are battle sections, but they're not really that hard, if I remember correctly.
No, that's out of all the sort of, you know, Donkey Kong's signature additional type of platforming, they're probably the easiest of the lot. But yeah, this ice lolly level is fucking clever as hell. I love it.
Yeah, I was a big fan of, there's like various bits in this world where you've got to use like the ice to get through different areas by sliding about. Reminded me, because we had recently played Mario Wonder, when you're on the conveyor belts in that final level.
Yeah.
Ever so slightly, but less vicious. Yeah, there's that. I think it's around this point, because it was that sort of rocket blasting level that was really sticking in my memory of a bit that wasn't a boss fight that gave me some real trouble. I think this game starts to get pretty hard around here.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always, I think I'm repeating myself, but it's never a slog. It's hard, but it's always rewarding.
Yeah.
Right. So, boss is the punch bowl.
Indeed it is.
He's like the kind of drunk panda, right?
Polar bear, yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
He does not give up. Like, he was relentless. I mean, yeah, David's put on a video of the boss fight. It's 5.5 minutes. This guy just won't fuck off.
No, he doesn't.
He is a fantastic boss though.
Oh, he's so good.
And yes, again, cranky is a must for this guy. I just love the fact, I love the animations of this polar bear. Like, everything about him is brilliant. The way he's annoyed at you, the way he swings his hammer, the way he flops into the water and climbs back up.
Yeah, this, because you're on a floating platform as well, they use the ground that you're on as a sort of obstacle in itself as well.
Yeah,
I quite like.
I love the way he just like casually like gives it like a little tap.
Such a dainty little tap, isn't it?
Yeah. Then later on, he absolutely starts hammering them at you.
I also like that bit there, just like, again, the animations, because it's a Nintendo game, so you would expect it, but the animations are spot on. I just realized he's changing it the same color as the ground around you.
I'm assuming his fur is just getting stained with the juice.
Yeah, so and I'm just realizing that, because I did think him turning purple was a slightly odd thing, but it makes sense.
It's like a de facto health bar for him, but it makes sense in terms of he's just fallen in that juice so many times. He's stained his white fur purple. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Another top tier boss.
Oh, both two S's for me.
Hey, I'm with you on that. That whole bit is my favourite section of the game. The second last boss world. The second last world and the second last boss.
Yeah, just the concept of the world all being based around different ways of like preparing fruit and stuff. And then, yeah, the final boss is just incredible.
Donkey Kong is back in his homecoming hijinks level. Instead of being all sunny, it's turned to snow.
It has indeed. It doesn't start off as strongly as I think I would have expected it to for the final level. I mean, it is Donkey Kong Island, so I guess they can't do too much crazy shit there. They've just kind of got your basic backgrounds and stuff, but now it's white. So I think there was an element for when you first start this world for me to kind of be slightly disappointed with it from an aesthetic standpoint.
I agree with you. It's not that I don't think it's necessarily bad. I just think it's like they've been throwing all this stuff at you, especially because the last world was so interesting.
Yeah.
And different to anything else. This one is sort of, I don't want to be overly harsh, but it's sort of a return to the first world, but they've just added snow and it's harder.
However, as the world goes on, it really starts to really kick into gear. Like, starting from Forest Folly towards the end is when shit starts to get real. Forest Folly is a level where a lot of it is based around, like, you're holding on to these platforms that have got grassy bits on that, you know, Donkey Kong can grab, but then they sort of like, they're all tipping over and you've got to like hold on to them.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Grab them at the correct time and then let it like sort of fling you.
Smart. It takes something that you've been interacting with for like the whole game and just switches it up entirely, or adds a new dimension to it at least.
Yeah. And then Cliffside Slide is one of the best levels in the game, without question. If not the best level in the game.
Oh, high praise.
Yeah. Well, this is basically another one of the silhouette levels where you are racing up a mountain while a cliffside's glowing on.
So it is, you're right. This, I forgot this existed, this level. Oh my God, so good.
Yeah, just so like hectic, and it feels like you've got to do everything so quickly.
You do. If you stop, this game will do you, this level.
Yeah. In fact, actually, Blurry Flurry is another good level as well. That's a rocket level, but the end of that one, you turn into a giant snowball rolling down a hill, which is a really cool end to it as well.
Oh, I find that this particular part of the rocket section pretty tough, actually.
Yes, it's a hard level.
For those that are listening, basically this is when it starts off, one of those rocket Flappy Bird levels. But increasingly so in this one, the area in which you've got to maneuver just gets so narrow. It just gets narrower and narrower until you've got hardly anywhere to go.
Yeah.
And then it just goes full destruction on you. It makes you, turns you into a massive snowball and fires you downhill.
Yeah, really cool.
I'm trying to look at it. I've got a feeling I managed to die as the snowball.
Me too. I died right at the end.
Yeah, I must have been there.
Yeah. Small mention here as well, actually, for like, obviously the barrels that you jump into at the end of every level, if you get the DK symbol, you can hammer the triggers to get more banana things.
I never got good at that.
Worst of all, although it's such a cool concept, but that one I never really managed to get the hang of, was when you do it at the end of a boss fight, to punch him in the face like as frantically and many times as you can.
Yeah.
I think I got 15 was my best one, but I did it too early and got like one, and then it like glitched out or something.
So much better than me. I was like, I think I got four once by accident. That was it. I was so bad at it. It's funny thinking back, like when I think back about playing all Donkey Kong games, there's like the odd level that just really sticks out in my brain. So there's like, I don't know, like the odd, the minecart ones, the barrel blast ones, and then like the one where you've got the, you're on a platform that you've got to keep filling up with fuel by collecting
yes.
it in the first Donkey. Like there's just the odd one that just sticks out in my head. And then there was that one that looks like it's from a Star Wars movie that I just got stuck on.
The one that looks like the Forest Moon of Endor. Yeah. Oh, Meltdown Mayhem's the one where you're on Rambi again, and the end of it is like you just basically spamming the fucking spank button as you run away from a wall of lava.
I think that was the one I touched on earlier. Really liked it.
Yeah, it's a fantastic like final level before the final
boss.
Yes,
this is great.
Yeah. Just like smacking a rhino on the arse as hard as going, run, you fucking ape!
The animation for him smacking the rhino is so funny as
yeah.
well.
It's through a long lineage of Nintendo characters like abusing their mounts. Yeah, like Yoshi getting smacked on the head.
Poor Yoshi.
Yeah.
Maybe, actually, like Mario should get his Yoshi license taken off him.
Yeah, he probably should. He's a bad man. So for this world, oh, are we going to do the boss first, are we? Before we do the tier list.
Yeah, the final boss.
The final dude.
Let's bring it home. This guy was tough.
Yeah.
In particular, the final phase, because I couldn't. It took me two or three goes to figure out, and I don't even know if I fully managed it, and I just got lucky. I want to see it to remind myself of it. Basically, it ends up in the sky, and then it starts dropping into the lava.
Yeah.
And you have to stay on the platform long enough for the platforms to rise back up again.
Yeah, that's what killed me, and then I turned it off.
And I just couldn't figure out, because, yeah, I just couldn't figure out the order.
You basically have to stand up there and sort of pay attention to the first one that drops, and then you want to aim for where that one is when you're landing, because that's the one that's going to come up first.
I did overall like this, so I've very much
liked it. I think he's a great boss, yeah.
Yeah, the way like he's like, he, at the start, he's like throwing stuff.
And you're trying to like juke him, and he's like in the back, like on his tiptoes going back and forward. Really, really clever.
Yeah, I love this boss.
Yeah, it's great.
I don't really have much to say about him, though. I think we've kind of covered it.
Yeah. Just in the middle of a volcano, fighting a big walrus.
With a big horn. Big Viking horn.
Big Viking walrus who just shoots, like, flying eagles made of ice at you while you chuck little penguins at him. Excellent. Yeah. Just that bit where it just game overs you on the dropping platforms, yeah. That was just too much for a tired man at midnight. Or nearly cracked my knuckles then out of habit, and then that would have been a bad time.
I want to put them both A for me. Where would you put them?
Agreed.
Where are you
agreed.
Feeling?
Yep, 100%.
You're in agreement?
Yeah.
I feel harsh on the poor old fish down at sea on his own, but best boss in the game, we have a toss-up between the three monkeys and the polar bear.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Closely followed up by the final boss, who's a massive walrus. I don't know, is it his younger seal brother underneath with the owl?
Yeah.
Great game.
I had such a brilliant time. I'm so glad you finally played it. And
I'm so glad.
It didn't let you down.
So glad we got around to it. Just need to find an excuse to get to the first one now.
That'll have an anniversary at some point. I think that was probably a few years away now. Probably 2008, I guess.
Will we have a look at this 2D platformer list?
Yeah, let's get on to... Yeah, so obviously, in my top 10, Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze is in there. My next one that I've got here, like I said, we said earlier, these are not in any order because I just can't.
No, because mine are not in an order either.
Super Mario World, obviously, would be in my top 10.
Yes.
That's probably
mine as well.
Most likely to take the number one spot off the top of my head.
I was having a think about what might have been your number one, and that's the one I thought might make it.
I'd say it probably is, yeah. It's up there for my favourite games ever, Mario World. There's just a comfort to it that I can slip back in and I know all the secrets and I know all the exits. And
that's one thing I never quite got to, is I don't know the secrets that well. Do like it though. Still a very, very pretty game.
Yeah.
Which I think is, for those of you that read Sega Force, I was talking about Jet Set Radio recently, and in a little peek of my article, I was talking about how the early era of 3D games and then sort of the subsequent 10 years ended up chasing realism and cinematic gameplay, and basically in a sort of escapade to become recognized as a legitimate mainstream hobby.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, I think a lot of the games that were just happy to sort of run off in their own direction and have a coherent art style that wasn't purely based around realism still look great today. I mean, like, when did Super Mario World come out?
92.
Early 90s, 92. And I think that still arguably looks as good as anything that's ever been made. Still a very, very pretty game.
Yeah.
And yeah. That's on hardware that you could probably, I don't know, your phone could run it easily, but I mean, like, that's long past. I mean, they said that apparently the computer that they landed the rocket on the moon wasn't as powerful as your mobile phone, so yeah, we're long past that.
Yeah, I imagine there's probably some fridges that can play Mario World.
Yeah, just give it a couple of years when Microsoft go full service games and they'll go full Sega.
Yeah,
they'll release it on a fridge maybe.
Yeah, my mother-in-law's oven plays music, so you know, she's almost
does
there.
It.
Yeah.
Is that like to tell you you're going to empty it or something?
Yeah,
open it up.
Yeah. When it's ready, it plays like a little theme song or something.
That's funny.
Yeah. So that's two of mine. Do you have both of the Tropical Freeze and Mario
World?
They
are both on my list, yes.
Okay. Let's hear one of yours.
I kind of, just to tick it off, because of course it's there, but we've already kind of touched on it today. Donkey Kong Country, the first one on the Super Nintendo, is definitely on my list. That game, I still think about that game, and I would happily play it any day.
Yeah, I don't know why I've heard, like, I know it's that Backpage podcast I listen to, they always shit on it.
Like, they
think it's just like, it was all about how it looked at the time, and now it doesn't look very good, and it, underneath the visuals, it's just like a not a great 2D platformer. But I'm so against that. I think it's one of the best. There's so much variety. You've got all the animals and all the stuff we've talked about earlier on today, the minecarts, the barrels, the challenge to it.
Yeah.
It's excellent.
Certainly shows its age, which is funny. I think I'd say this every time Donkey Kong Country comes up, but I remember when I was a kid looking at Donkey Kong Country on a CRT TV and thinking, graphics can't get any better than this. And now you look at it and it's just kind of like a splodge on a screen. What's up next, Alex?
My next one is Rocket Knight Adventures, which you've said, you know, you need to get around to playing.
I need to play that. Really need to play that. You have pre-ordered that, have you not?
I have, yes. The Resparked, or whatever they call it, through Limited Run Games. I have indeed pre-ordered that, yeah. Which also has Sparkster on it as well, which is the SNES version, I think. And then there's a sequel to it as well, I think, that's on there. Nothing is quite as good as the original, although the sequel does come quite close. It's just the jetpack stuff that you've got going with it that I really enjoy, where you can kind of like aim this like rocket jump. It's got quite a lot of variety to it. It's got some interesting boss fights. There's one where you like pilot a giant mech and punch another thing in the face. It seems as well, like across both platforms, but on the Mega Drive especially, where Konami just putting out absolute like top 10 GOAT bangers out of absolutely nowhere. Like Contra Hardcore, Rocket Knight Adventures. Some of the bosses in that game, again, they've got an underwater boss in that one where you've got to fight like a pig and a giant crab thing. They also have like sort of shoot 'em up levels as well, where you actually, where he's actually flying and you've got to like go around shooting stuff as you would in an additional like Gradius. Graphically, really beautiful. It's got like a steampunk aesthetic to it. Like you pick this game up and play it, you're going to have a really good time. It's tough, like really tough, harder than Donkey Kong Country, I would say. I had to use quite a lot of save states to get through some of the harder levels in it, but Rocket Knight Adventures, I think if you played that, you'd have a really, really good time. And I would happily do a podcast about Rocket Knight Adventures.
This is one that kind of snuck up on me, Alex. I remember like playing it and people were losing their mind about it and I wasn't that enamored about it. But when I think back to it, I played this game every day, at least to do a couple of levels for a number of months, and I rarely do that. So I think it kind of has to make my top 10. Super Mario Maker.
Okay. That is not in my list.
I didn't do much making.
Yeah.
I frequently would just go looking for levels. And I just love the community that sort of sprouted up around it, people obsessively making levels and challenging people. I guess like it does feel like a little bit of a tenuous attempt to put it on this list, because the design of itself is actually to let everyone else do it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, I just loved this game. I think it sparked an inventiveness And I actually, there's a bit of me that wonders if the final level exists in Super Mario Wonder in quite the same way as it does if it wasn't for Mario Maker, because I think that what is the term, is it like kaiju levels that people were called, like
Kaizo people
yeah. that just got obsessed with ridiculously difficult levels. And I think at the point that Super Mario Maker had come out, that had all but vanished from those games. And it sort of made a comeback ever so slightly in the latter part of the game. So yeah, I was a big fan of that. I liked the additions they made. I liked it birthed that strange long Mario appearance in Super Mario Maker. I just thought it was a really cool idea that they struck gold with. And yeah, never they whiffed Mario Maker 2 ever so, but I'm not sure why.
Yeah, the hardware just didn't work as well as the Wii U. It's the one thing that Wii U remote exists for, I think.
Mm-hmm.
One of the greatest things about Mario Maker is what it did for the sort of speed running event community, where the Awesome Games Done Quick every year for a while, they would have like the best Mario speedrunners in the world all like separated into two different teams playing. Mm-hmm. Like they had to take it in turns and swap the controller every time they died. And they would have user created levels of Mario Maker that they'd never played before. So they had no way of practicing for it. And it was just like running a gauntlet race against each other. That's like some of the best speedrunning content you'll ever see. Just like Grand Pooh Bear and all these great Mario speedrunners just playing like these insanely hard levels they've never played before that were made in Mario Maker, because the tools for Mario Maker were so accessible.
So easy. Like anybody, you were always hearing about like video game critics, kids that were picking it up and managing to at least put a coherent, completable level into it. It was maybe a bit bonkers, but yeah, like the vicious stuff people would do. Now, there's like levels that I can still remember playing where you would like get almost to the end and then it would give you a choice of like four pipes or something like that, and you pick one, and it takes you back to the beginning.
Yeah.
And like that is vicious. And I was kind of, during that era, I was kind of all in for that. I just kind of just appreciated what the community that sprouted out with that game.
Absolute stroke of genius making it so that you have to be able to complete it yourself before you can upload it.
Yes.
Stop people just being pieces of shit.
Yeah, just upload an uncompletable levels. Yeah.
Mario Maker was a really, really cool thing.
What's next? What have you got, Alex?
My next one, my fourth one in my list, is Sonic 2.
That's on my list.
Good.
That is on my list.
I think for me, it's my favourite Mega Drive Sonic game.
I think so. Yeah. I was thinking about Sonic. When I made my first iteration of this list, and honestly, there's like two or three Sonic games that could probably make the list of the old school ones, but yeah, I think Sonic of them all, Sonic 2 is probably my favorite of the bunch.
Agreed.
As well.
Yeah, soundtrack is by far my favorite of all the Sonic games. Just has some really memorable. I mean, obviously, you know, Chemical Plant Zone is the one everybody remembers because of all the purple water and all that kind of stuff. But there's some cool stuff towards the end of it as well. I think I've got some honorable mentions, and Sonic 3 was definitely in there. Sonic Mania as well. I think Sonic Mania is probably up there for the best Sonic games. I really do like Sonic 3. I quite like Sonic and Knuckles and Sonic CD. I like a lot of the Sonic games, but yeah, Sonic 2 just has everything at peak Sonic levels for me.
Mm-hmm.
What's your next one?
This one's probably a bit left field, but I didn't like I find the story not so interesting, but the game itself was absolutely brilliant. I've got Celeste on my list.
I have also got Celeste on my list.
Oh, you do?
I do. I think Celeste is incredible.
Absolutely incredible. It is tough. It is rewarding. It makes you do things. Like if you were to watch someone play this game having not picked up the controller, you'd be watching them thinking, I'm never going to be able to do that. But the game smartly sort of ramps things up to the point that you are doing these things sort of without realizing you are. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Go and remind me, can you remember, there's a guy that's in my head who I think, is he like a boss fight? Is he like a hotel manager?
Yes. Yeah.
And he tries to keep you in the hotel or something, and you have to fight him to escape. That is a fantastic boss.
Really, really clever. The whole premise of Celeste with her having this dash move makes it like one of the tightest. It needs to be one of the tightest platformers I think I've played in like 20 odd years.
I think so, yeah.
It's so specifically built around movement in tight spaces where you have to get everything kind of spot on, pixel perfect, that completing every single level feels like you've mastered the game over and over again. Like,
oh, it does.
You're properly zen with how it's supposed to work. And the way you can chain combos, like where they would have those things in the air, like little gems that would give you a second dash, and you could like combo all of that together to basically never touch the floor. Like, it took one main sort of key idea and then like ran with it and ramped it up as the game went on. The story, you know, it's a bit of a wet wipe, but
yeah, it is.
I don't really care to try and force that kind of mental health stuff into a game that's supposed to be just jumping around and having fun.
It was a bit of a go-to, wasn't it, for a while, mental health in video games?
Yeah, but this one is just so on the fucking nose. Like, it's so blatantly, that's what it is. It's about mental health struggles, but it manifests as an evil version of you. Like, come on. I didn't need, just make it an actual evil version of her or something. Make it a ghost or something silly. But yeah, outside of that, you know, the presentation, the pixel art's really nice, but the platforming in it is fucking top tier. Mm-hmm. Really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
That was both of us, wasn't it? I've crossed off five of mine now. How many have you gone through?
Six.
Oh, okay, right. Well, Mega Man 2.
Here he goes.
Mega Man 2, I've played that one the most of all the Mega Man games. I actually do think that Mega Man 3 is, again, it's another honorable mention, may actually be just about the better of those two games, but Mega Man 2's soundtrack is so memorable to me, and the bosses in it are so much better than any of the other ones. I'll always love it more than the other games. This was possibly the one that I would have got rid of from my top 10 because it's not fully a platformer. There's a lot of like shooting and boss fighting in it. But just the premise of Mega Man itself, back in the NES days where it was, you know, you fight all these robot bosses, you get their powers, there's a rock, paper, scissors thing going on where some enemies' weapons are better against, you know, the subsequent bosses. You've got to find the right order to do them in. Obviously a really punishing game, really difficult, but I will never not love the original Mega Man games. They're so good.
I was just Googling there, and I think I was like, I've completed a Mega Man game, but I don't know which one it is. I think it's just the first Mega Man I've played.
Which is one of the hardest ones. Well, and the worst one.
Completed it. Completed life.
Yeah.
I do remember that is the Yellow Devil was maybe the hardest boss I've ever fought in my entire life.
Yeah. Guy's a dick bag.
Brutally difficult.
But yeah, Mega Man 2 is far better than Mega Man 1. And 3 is really cool as well. And 4. And Mega Man X was another one of my honorable mentions. The one that was on the SNES, that's plays very differently to the SNES ones and might be something you would enjoy more than those.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Maybe we have to do a Mega Man education session.
Yeah, that would be good.
What I want to mention on my list is Thomas Was Alone.
Yes, that's not on mine, but I do love that game.
Book about Celeste being all about the gameplay. I actually find Thomas Was Alone quite I remember them again. I'm repeating myself all over that. It's like opposite Celeste it's the narrative that sort of compelled me through this game. But the game is competently fun from what I can remember of it as well. But it's doing a lot with a little. Like this is a platforming game about a bunch of squares. And they managed to write that into a compelling story.
Yeah, they managed to give these like shapes personalities. It's great.
Yeah. And it's just like Thomas who just becomes a sentient bit in a computer. And he just starts traveling around, meeting other bits that are sort of semi-sentient, but they are also prisoners to their own purpose. So, they have a trait, they have to sort of stick to that, which then ends up becoming like the mechanic of that level.
Yeah.
And then Thomas is just sort of on his own with his newfound awareness, making his way. It seems, if I remember correctly, out of the computer in some way.
Mm.
Or to the top of it. Yeah, it's such a wonderful game, and if you haven't played it yet, you should. I played mine on my PSP, and that is
lovely.
Play that.
Yeah, I think I played mine on PS3. A really cool game. Really chill out sesh.
Vita. It wasn't a PSP, it was a Vita.
Yes, it would have been Vita, yeah. Yeah, I really like the narration from, what's the guy's name? Danny?
Is it a famous guy?
Yeah, it's like a British comedian.
Oh, that guy, yeah. What's he called? Danny?
It's really cleverly interwoven into the gameplay where he's narrating on almost as... It almost sounds reactive and dynamic to what you're doing.
Danny Wallace.
Danny Wallace, that's it. But he's got quite a soothing voice, to be fair to him. It's just a lovely time. Not overly challenging, but clever. It's more of a puzzle game than it is a platformer.
Yes. I just thought of one game that made my list there that I'll add it to my honourable mentions when we get to it, but it hadn't made my second list. That just Danny Walsh reminded me of it.
Interesting.
It was more his role in Thomas Was Alone.
Hmm. Okay. Well, there's one that you said earlier that you need to play more of, or you need to be reminded of, but it's definitely in my top 10 of all time, is Shovel Knight.
Yes, I am actually perhaps keen to try and get to that this year if we can.
Okay, love to.
Yeah, because that's a game that I've long coveted. I've played numerous hours of it over the course of the years, but it's always the start. Like, I always do like the first world or two, and then something happens or another game comes out.
Central theme song for Shovel Knight is an absolute banger. It's one of my favorite video game themes that exists.
Yes.
Every version of Shovel Knight that they've brought out has been fantastic as well. All the sort of secondary games where you get to play as different knights that you've fought previously.
So is that what they've done?
You've
taken a different knight.
Yeah, so there's one where you play as... I think it's Plague Knight, and you've got to use like his little potions and stuff to sort of bounce around. The movement is different to Shovel Knight. You've got like the DuckTales thing, as we mentioned earlier, where you're bouncing on his spade. And that's the sort of the core mechanic of that game.
And is it a whole new game, or is it like an add-on to the existing game?
Some of them like do repeat the levels, I think, from the original game.
Okay.
But you're obviously traversing them in a different way. So you've got like a different perspective for each level that you're redoing.
So there's no complete box you could... buy with everything in it.
There is. I think it's on Switch, and it's probably on other things as well. But the most recent one they did, King of Cards, has a collectible deck building card game element to it, where you do lots of card fights.
Yes.
I think you would absolutely love that one. That I think may actually be my favorite of all the Shovel Knight games.
What's the name? Is it? There's one on Steam called Shovel Knight Trove.
That's probably it. Just see what that's got in it.
Would that be everything?
Is it the It says it's in the most
expensive
Treasure Trove
saga. It's like £31. It's the complete Shovel Knight collection containing all five games in the Epic Saga. Dig, blast, slash, and bash your way through a fantastical 8-bit inspired. That's going on my wish list. Because if I can get that on my Steam Deck, that's fucking class.
Oh, playing that on a Steam Deck would be great. So that has Shovel Knight, Shovel of Hope, Plague of Shadows. That's where you play as Plague Knight using the potions. Spectre of Torment. Oh, Spectre Knight. Yeah, that's a great one where you have to, like, he has a dash move that he uses with his scythe. That's fucking awesome. King of Cards, as I said, is the one where you play as King Knight, and it's also a deck building game as well. And I've not played Showdown, which seems like it's a multiplayer thing, so meh. Shovel of Hope. Having a treasure trove where they've put all the games together, and they've called the first game Shovel Knight, Shovel of Hope, makes me think that they've done like a New Hope when they added that as a suffix to the first Star Wars when they re-released it. But that could be me thinking too far into that.
I hope you're right.
But yeah, well worth owning that treasure trove. It's next to you. What you got next? I have done 8 now. I've got 2 left.
Next one for me, Rayman Origins. We all know that was going to be on the list. And he's made it.
It's an honourable mention for me because I actually think Rayman Legends is the better of the two.
Is that's the one with the music?
Yes.
Yeah, see, I think I was Raymaned out by that point because I remember there was like a couple bits I enjoyed of that. There's like a final, it's not a boss, but it's like a final level to one of the worlds, which is absolutely fantastic, where you've basically just got to hit all your jumps. But I was, Rayman Origins was peak for me. I just thought, I think we spoke about it at the time, and it's one of the, I was going to say few, I don't know how many things I would stick by, but it's one of the things I would stick by saying that it was like the best 2D Mario game since, it wasn't even a Mario game, but it was just a best 2D platformer since peak Mario at that point.
This came out during a time, both of them came out during a time where 2D Mario was bland as shit. And it
exactly.
was the Wii, and you and I were saying over and over again, like, why aren't Nintendo looking at Rayman and being like, why aren't we doing that?
Yeah.
Look at what this company's doing with their old mascot. They've got all this beautiful hand-drawn art. I think it was hand-drawn, but it looks hand-drawn
anyway.
Was
that Michelle and Cell joint, was it?
It's got, probably. And it's got all that like incredible music, especially the music, the levels
the
that are based
art,
around
yes.
music.
Yes.
Some of the themes to like the levels. There's one where you have to like basically like eat your way through cake and stuff. And the Wii U
swimming
game
is good
pad
in this game.
Integration. What were you saying, sorry?
The swimming is good in this game.
Swimming was good in the game, yeah. Yeah. Both those two games are modern classics. They are so yes. good.
And I don't think they sold very well, which is why they kind of stopped, which is a shame, because this was like... Yeah. This was Ubisoft, when Ubisoft were, they were doing their map vomit stuff, but they were also doing their interesting stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's just a shame, because this is a game that Ubisoft would not make in 2024.
No, see, yeah, they're going to have to do a Rayman game at some point that isn't a Rabbids. You'd think, but
don't know, man.
The fact that the sequel was basically made for the Wii U, and then the Wii U was an absolute shit show that nobody bought, and then they panicked mm-hmm. and brought it out on everything else, but it wasn't designed for those things. It's a shame, because mm-hmm. there's so much potential in these games to do more of them and make them still great.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
How many have you got left? One?
Two.
Two. All right, you go then. I've got one left.
Super Mario 3.
Okay, that's in my honorable mentions, because I've got Super Mario yep. Wonder in my top 10.
So sure. do I. That's my okay. final one. Okay. Yeah. So Super Mario 3, I was at a toss-up between, so like my honourable mention that I feel painful that I've moved out of Super Mario Brothers 2, because I used to always champion that game.
Yeah.
But after we've gone through several platformers in recent years on this podcast, and including Super Mario All-Stars.
Yeah.
I've just kind of fallen out of love with it a little bit.
Mm. It's very noticeably not a proper Mario game, isn't it?
Exactly. I'm actually quite desperate to play Doki Doki Panic in its original form to see how it is.
I do have a Famicom. I think it's Famicom Disc, though.
Yeah. But yeah, Mario 3 is great. That was the one I played off most as a kid. It's a Super Nintendo one, is it? No, it's not. It was originally NES, wasn't it?
It's a NES one, yeah. It's one right at the end of the NES that came out.
Okay, the one specifically I like is the All-Stars sort of remaster, remake thing.
Yeah.
It just looks much more colourful and it's fun to use. Yeah. It went Mario, what, 1, Lost Levels, 2, 3, yeah. World, right? Yeah. Okay.
And then Yoshi's Island, obviously.
Lost Levels can get in the bin.
Lost Levels can get in the bin. Yeah, it's not a good game. It's a challenging game. Do you want to tick it off a bucket list, but it's not fun.
No.
Certainly not the NES version. The NES version is horrible. The one on the Mario All-Stars is just about tolerable because you can save your progress.
Mm-hmm.
But the original one, you've got to start from the beginning again. It's fucking horrible. But Mario Wonder, I mean, we've got a whole podcast about that. It is fantastic. Like, it's a beautiful game.
I can't believe, yeah, like 6 months ago, I don't even think I wanted to play that game.
Yeah! It's true. Yeah, but that's where they were with that.
Now here I am adding it to a top 10 list.
Yeah, but yeah, check out that episode to hear more. There's no point in that.
It's one of the, yeah, like, that. I don't know, yeah, just like as a little peek. Like, it's one of the most inventive games, I think, that's ever been made. Like, every level has a new idea
yeah.
that it brings to the table, and it's just, it is a wonder. It is a wonder.
It's made me very excited for the future of Mario in all forms, yeah. based off of the back of, like, how many ideas they shoved into that and how many more, apparently, that were left on the table.
Here's something for you to think about when you go to bed. Top 5 or top 10 IPs that have made comebacks. In unexpected ways, because so the Mario Super Mario Brothers to that, it's just such a night and day. Resident Evil has to make that list as well, I think probably between 6 and 7, but that's for another day.
That is for another day.
The other sort of honourable mentions I've got, Inside, really like that game.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit scared of it now, given how dramatically have you turned on Limbo.
Yeah.
Fucking loved that game when it came out. And then we played it again for a podcast and I was like, oh, it's not as good as it used to be.
Inside's definitely way more impactful now. Mm-hmm. Whereas Limbo just kind of feels almost like it's just a puzzler where you don't feel any of the peril. Inside definitely still feels stressful.
Good. Because I remember people in Limbo were going on about how they were getting triggered by the spider in it. Mm-hmm. And I remember playing it again and just like, it's just a black blob that runs about and he pulls legs off.
And at first point, it's just like a pointy thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the time, incredible, but yeah, not anymore.
The other one, actually, on a second pass and a closer think, may make it into my top 10. Can't decide. Little Big Planet. Bloody loved that game.
Oh, really? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Massive fan of Little Big Planet. Little Big Planet 2 is also good, mm-hmm. But Little Big Planet's the one that's sort of proof of concept. What a wonderful game that is. And it was great fun just like dressing up your wee sack boy and...
Yeah.
Stephen Fry narrating for us.
Yeah, that's what made you think about Danny Wallace. Yeah, right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I just could never get on with making stuff in it, that felt nowhere near as intuitive as Mario Maker was.
No, it wasn't, was it?
Just and I
wasn't.
Kept seeing all this cool stuff, like people were making like Duck Hunt and things in it, and I was just like, this game looks awesome. And I got it, and it was just like, oh, the platforming's a bit floaty, and I can't make anything good, and just kind of gave up on it. So I really wish I'd been more engaged with that when it was at its peak and had some ability to make something interesting with it.
The fun in that game for me was actually playing through the made levels by the developers and sort of mm-hmm. playing through that. I did sort of dabble in the user-generated stuff, which is, I was actually thinking about it, it's quite an interesting time for Sony. They were doing some really mad stuff during that period.
Yeah.
It wasn't all rubbish Resistance Fall of Man games. Yeah. They've got... yeah, it would be fun because they would like tie up Sony IPs into Sackboy, so you could get like a Metal Gear Solid. I know it's not a Sony one, but like for example, you could get a Snake outfit that you could dress.
As well.
Yeah, and people would dress them up as that, and then you could get like Metal Gear Solid themed levels that people had made, which was quite fun to engage with. Yeah, that was a cool year, and that was a cool game.
Mm.
Sort of came along at the same time as 3D Dot Game Heroes, which is another game that I was a big fan of.
You were. What about Super Meat Boy?
Meat Boy, I enjoyed it.
I've never beaten it.
Never beaten it. I just don't think it makes a top 10 for me. I enjoyed what it was. I don't think about that game like I think about these games.
Yeah.
But it is a good game.
One that very nearly snuck in for me was Super Castlevania 4. It's probably that and Castlevania Bloodlines on the Mega Drive are both two very, very good games. But Castlevania 4 is probably the better of the two. It just does some stuff with the Mode 7 in the SNES that's really clever. Like you can rotate your rotating rooms by hanging on a candlestick and it will like turn the entire, like spin the whole room around and stuff. Quite challenging game, but obviously that's potentially, you know, you're talking about games that made comebacks in surprising ways. This obviously didn't make a comeback, didn't need to make a comeback. But the difference between Castlevania 4 and Symphony of the Night is massive. Like, Symphony of the Night's not really a platformer at all. It's a new genre upon itself. It was a Metroidvania. Whereas Castlevania 4 is very much an old school sort of platformer. But I really, really like it.
I suppose that's it, isn't it, Alex? A bit of a different one today. Sorry, folks. Life got in the way on this one, so I apologise.
I think it's been fun.
Found something
it's been
to
like
enjoy.
A magazine show. We've had loads of stuff crammed in there.
It's been bringing it back to the old days where we just talk shit, Alex. We never stopped talking shit, did we? What have we got up next?
Oh, up next is February Film Fest, my friend.
Hell yes.
Roll ball cap.
Do you want to give people a quick rundown of what that is?
Yeah.
Give them a nice idea, because this is something different from what we've been doing over the last couple of years.
Yes, indeed. It's based off of the fact that David, you probably just said it as a throwaway comment on one of our podcasts when something was related to a film and a game we were playing. You said, oh, I'd love to have a sort of a bit of a podcast where we chat about films. So we're going to do that in this podcast.
Yeah.
Whilst we also, alongside a film, play a game that is either related to or a licensed version of, or you know, just in the same franchise as that film. So we're going to start off with RoboCop, Rogue City, and RoboCop. Although the Rogue City is apparently a bridge between RoboCop 2 and 3, so I may just watch the whole trilogy.
Yeah, I think I might just fall down this rabbit hole with you, like I did with Alien.
Yeah, which I did not fall down enough.
It's one of my favourite rabbit holes, considering how much I disliked the game we were playing.
Yeah.
I just went absolutely alien mad.
Yeah, he did. I wish I'd done that as well. And then the next one we're going to do is an un-yet-decided Batman film plus Arkham Asylum.
So Arkham Asylum, we've sort of loosely decided the Robert Pattinson Batman.
I think the way to go, because there's a sequel coming out for that soon as well.
Yeah, so I think that's perhaps the one where Batman goes emo.
I saw it in the cinema and liked it, and I want to go back and then see if I still do.
Yeah, so I came out the cinema thinking I liked this far more than I was expecting to.
Exactly that.
I did see a funny gif on Twitter of the Dark Knight, one of the Dark Knight trilogy, that when Two-Face is in hospital and the Joker goes to see him, and then the Joker's like dressed up as the nurse and he pulls off his mask. And then Two-Face goes absolutely wild. People should look this up, because I don't know why, but it just had me creasing because it is clearly the Joker, because he's got his like he's got all his face paint on, he's got his mad hair, he's just wearing a female nurse's uniform.
Yeah,
and Two-Face is just lying calmly on the bed until he takes his mask off. It's just like the idea that he didn't know that was the Joker when he walked into the room. It's just so good.
It's like all those things back in WCW where Sting would wear a Sting mask and take the Sting mask off and you'd see it was Sting.
Yeah.
He's done it like 10 times in his career. Just keeps doing it.
He still wrestles, right? Because I thought did he not get a bad concussion in WWE and then he's retired?
He got like a really bad neck injury or something. Because Seth Rollins threw him on a turnbuckle and fucked him up. But he's retiring next month in March 2024. He's got his last match coming up, which I believe is going to be against the Young Bucks in a tag match.
Do wrestlers always lose their last match? Is that how it goes?
I believe that's supposed to be part of the doing a favour to the business sort of thing. But I think it might only be if you're a champion, you've got to drop it before you leave.
Right, because I was going to say, everybody that's even heard of wrestling has seen Ric Flair crying as he gets sweet chin music by Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, that's very, very funny.
And on that bombshell, that brings us to the end of another Winners You podcast. If you liked what you heard, and even if you didn't, why not give our numbers a bump by subscribing to us on your podcast feed of choice? Or if you prefer to consume your podcast in a visual format, you can head on over to YouTube and search for Winners You podcast, where you can subscribe to us on our YouTube channel. If the podcast isn't enough for your bi-weekly dose of our Winners You chattery, you can also find us on the website. I've still got the website formerly known as Twitter right down. I did delete it and write X and then thought, no, I'm not doing what he says, and then changed it back. So we are on Twitter at Winners You Pod, and you can even send us an email to tell us how wrong we are about our gaming opinions by writing to winnersyoupod@gmail.com. Alex and I also have not Twitter. At David Smiley and at Super Thrillix, and we have TikTok, so head on over there and search of our Winners You Pod if you wish. Any housekeeping, Alex, before we get out of here?
No.
Housekeeping. His house is clean.
My house is clean. Sega Force Mega, I think issue 2 is coming out soon, isn't it? You mentioned that at the beginning, so go look at Fusion Retro Books and you'll see the magazine that David and I write for.
I got an email trying to make me buy it yesterday, maybe.
So okay.
They are pushing it. And on that bombshell, I have been David, he has been Alex, and we have been a Winners You, and I'm out.
Keep gaming.